And I, for one, welcome our new manager overlord, whoever you may be. We will back you 100% until you start losing games. And then we are off that bandwagon.
That's it. Then we'll be singing for your head as well. Like I said, fickle football fans.
The home of fickle football fans. For the third time in just over 3 years, Reading are on the hunt for a new manager after defeat to QPR proves the final act of the Steve Clarke era. We'll dive into whether that was the right call to make, reflect on his tenure, and of course cast our eye over who might come next in the 77th edition of the Tireless Den podcast. Hello and welcome to the show. Thank you to everyone who's downloaded and listened this week. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of thetirelessden.com. I'm joined this week by our deputy editor, Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Turning up for all the big podcasts, as always. Was there for the big games, Johnny? Yeah, anyway.
Better late than never. Just the 25 minutes late this week, Johnny. You've been fined 10% of your match fee.
Better late than never.
Indeed. Key cogs are here.
And you should turn up eventually, unlike some of the players.
Yeah.
Oh, nice plug.
Thanks.
Like it. And the other voice you've just heard is Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Hello, and hello to everyone out there.
Yep, hope you're all enjoying the festive spirit and getting into good cheer. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of it to go around Reading at the moment. As mentioned, if you have been living under a rock, the Reading manager has been sacked. Steve Clarke, no longer in a job. And as the time we record this, which is about 5:30 on Monday afternoon, no replacement named. So, it will be in typical fashion. They will announce an appointment as soon as I upload this into the internet. But in the meantime, we'll talk on the basis that Reading haven't appointed a manager. So we'll look at who might take over, give our opinion on whether it was the right decision to get rid of Clarke, and plenty more. Massive mailbag, as you might well expect. So we'll come on to all that in a minute, as well as that 1-0 defeat to QPR. But just before we move on, we're on a bit of a funding drive.
Fundraisers.
We're on a fundraiser. Now, we take a lot of pride in what we do here on the tirelessden.com, both as a website and a podcast, but sometimes we need a little bit of extra funding to take us forward. I put out a funding request last week, and I'm delighted to say, I'm very appreciative as well, that three people have so far stepped up to the plate. Our friend Mac Tiger, Lord Treby, and the one and only Valimar Yanishak. They've all stepped up to the plate and have pledged various amounts. So thank you very much. If you want to help support us, you can just go. There'll be a link attached to this podcast on the story on the website. You can go there and pledge. I think it starts at about $2 a month, which is about a pound. And goes all the way up to $20 a month. And depending on what tiering you get various incentives and goodies. So there you go. I've done my shill for the week.
No, thank you very much to all three of them. I know Lord Treby's been a regular listener since the day I started it. So it's a very nice man.
Yeah, as I said, thank you very much to all three of you. They all do have standing invites to appear on the show. Might be harder for Mac. He lives in the States. So we'll see about that one. But they've also got the rights to pub chat topics as well. So we'll see what they come up with over the next few weeks. But in the meantime, as I said, let's move on. Let's talk about that defeat to QPR and what it led to for Steve Clarke.
View from the Tirelessden End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So guys, the Bad Hoops won the Battle of the Manesi Stadium earlier this week. Unfortunately, a 1-0 win for QPR. Late goal for Nedim Manua. Fair to say, an Al Habsi howler. More than a great bit of skill from the QPR defender.
Another one.
Yeah.
A player of the month, or the official player of the month.
It's always a really big kick in the teeth when that happens, when they make an absolute
I'm sorry, but how on earth did he get voted player of the month in the first place? I know he made the top three in our very own Tirelessden podcast player of the month, which was won by Oliver Norwood. Mm-hmm. Rightly so, in my opinion. So how do you vote for Al Habsi, who, because he did 8 goals in 4 games, I think Reading won once, he didn't keep a clean sheet, and he dropped one in the net at Forest.
I think, and I don't wish to generalise, that probably people saw far more of his fantastic performance against Bolton than his awful performance against Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, like you said, we only won 1 game in that time and it was largely down to him. So there was no opportunity to vote for anyone else, I didn't think.
Oh, well, Oliver Norwood took our award anyway, so congrats, Ollie. And, but yeah, so Hello Habsi starts this one. A couple of changes made to the team. No Lucas Pearson. It was a change that many had been calling for and he was completely out of the 18. So no hiding place for him. Alex Fernandez, given a bit of an odd start out on the left-hand side. What did you make of Fernandez's debut on the left wing?
I think he done all right. Again, there wasn't any point in that game when I thought anyone was playing particularly badly. They just wasn't doing an awful lot when they had the ball. I mean, you can't go for a home match against a team like QPR who haven't won away for God knows how many months and not put a shot in on goal. So Fernandez, I think he was put in the role of that they did with earlier in the season with I can't remember his name now. Sorry. Quinn.
There you go.
Yeah, Stephen, when Quinn was played out on the left side, I think Fernandes was told to play that role, but it clearly didn't work, and let's face it, Red never looked like winning the game.
I don't think we ever looked like winning the game, but I certainly don't think we ever looked like losing the game. And if you go back and look through the chances, and you know, I'll just list them off now, Vidra had a couple where he could have just got on the end of it. Blackman hit the bar with a free kick. He had two headers from Hector. He had a shanked shot from Hal Robson-Kanu, obviously. He had another shanked shot across the box, I think from Nick Blackman as well. Whereas their only two chances, really, came from Anuaha. The one where he nodded over from a free kick or something like that in the 85th minute. And the one where it should have been saved in the 90th minute. So we did lose, but I really, really don't think we deserve to lose that match. We had less possession and less territory, and certainly it was a frustrating game to watch. But I thought when you look back at that game, we had far better chances, and probably on the balance of things, if one team deserved to get 3 points, it was probably us.
Point is, though, Johnny, they didn't.
This is it.
And ultimately, they didn't. I mean, the crowd were dead. Yeah. There was an announced attendance, I think, of around 16,500. I'll be damned if there was anywhere near that in the ground. It was, in my opinion, about 14,500, 15,000,
I mean, a rot set in. Yeah, I mean, even a 0-0, they wouldn't have been happy walking away from that game thinking we'd done well there, because it wasn't a great game to watch. No. Certainly wasn't a spectacle, and the fans are starting to vote with their feet, and that has obviously was pushed the button on his departure.
Yeah, we didn't even have a scoreboard to look at. The video wall is being replaced, so we had to put it with extra DJ Mega Party.
Which you can imagine
how that contributed to the atmosphere.
Couldn't plan when to leave at the end. Had to wait for the man to put his board up.
Yeah, of course you did. Yeah, I didn't know what was coming.
No.
Would have allowed Habsy.
No. I was going to say, is it time for our Habsy to be dropped?
Again, I don't think either one of the goalkeepers are particularly good. I don't think it makes a lot of difference. I mean, Bond made more than a few mistakes when he was in goal, so
this is
it's one or the other, isn't it?
This is the problem. This is the wider debate. Is everyone was calling for Al Habsy to come in as the experienced hand, and you forgot about his mistakes then when Bond was dropping a few clangers.
Yeah.
Now Al Habsy's dropping a few. It's a cyclical argument that has no answer.
Now, Al Habsy's always dropped clangers throughout his career. It's not a new thing seeing him make mistakes.
Hmm. Absolutely not. So QPR take the win. It doesn't actually drop Reading too far away. I think there's about 6-7 teams separated by 2-3 points in the Championship, so that is a nice thing.
There's some poor results above us as well.
Yeah, Burnley lost at home to Preston.
Brighton got beat. I mean, it was
Birmingham got beat.
So again, it hasn't affected us overly. It's just the manner in which we're not getting into games at the moment, whereas before we were rolling teams over.
Yeah. What did you make of the decision not to start Orlando Saar?
I don't think he deserves a start over recent performances, but we see again that Vidra can't play up front on his own unless you're going to put balls over the top and let it run onto him. There's no point trying to give it to his feet because it's not his game.
That was the problem with Vidra. He made so many of those runs where he was looking along the line and just made that run in behind and was waiting for the pass, but no one put it in.
Yeah, I think Troy Deeney tweeted something similar. Then he said, I've seen him make 4 runs and no one's even bothered to look to find him, which will come with experience of the team and everyone playing together, I guess. But I think we've seen Vidra up front before and it didn't work then, and it certainly didn't work then.
The other big griping point was the substitutions. Thoughts on that? Again, a lot of people using it as a stick to beat Steve Clarke with the likes of Ola John coming on. Nick Blackman being taken off for me was the weird one.
I don't understand why you'd take Blackman off unless he was injured. You might as well put him up front.
He did look to be, I think he looked to be holding the back of his thigh or something when he came off. I didn't think there was particularly anything wrong with the substitutions. He needed to change something. It was plainly obvious that nothing was working, so he had to change something up, bring on Ola John, bit of pace maybe, bring on Saar, a bit of a presence up front, because QPR, as I said, were dominating in the middle of the park and we didn't really have an outlet. It was just hoof it clear and there's no one up there to win the ball back.
Yeah, I can see why he brought both of them two on, definitely. I just didn't understand why Blackman come off.
Yeah, the one positive I think you take from that is that, again, it's just shown me, looking at another team that's come to the Medeski this year, the Championship is so average.
It's pretty poor.
So average. And if they put a good run of form together, they've still got every chance of getting back in the mix.
I mean, Brighton aren't world beaters by any stretch of the imagination. And they're top of the league. So
Reading should have beat them.
It's been a poor league for quite a while, let's face it, in general.
Can I just put out one really good word for Anton Ferdinand, who I thought was absolutely class on the day?
I would say as well, did you see how many balls Hector hoofed up into the sky?
Oh, just completely. Just like, just up in the air, not even with any direction.
If Jose Mourinho was watching, I think he might let us keep him here till the end of the season at the moment.
Don't know. Chelsea lost again. Don't think they could do much worse. 1-0 home defeat. A couple of tweets just on the game very quickly before we move on. Ian Wilson, our resident Leicester fan that listens to this show, who probably slightly enjoying life being near the top of the Premier League. It's a tough life as a Leicester fan. having that party with Jamie Vardy.
And they've been amazing as well, Leicester.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. He said, well, that Westie bloke called it. Awful to see Colin all happy and gleeful up there as one of the most despicable coaches. Yeah, that did leave a little bit of an extra sour taste seeing Neil get the Neil Warnock get the victory.
Had to be as well, didn't it? Yeah. He's got a lot of history with Reading, and it always seems to be the good and bad. But to be fair, when we look back in 10 years' time, I think we'll look back on fondness on Mr. Warnock, not that we hate him like we do now.
I don't think we will at all. I hate his guts.
Yeah, I can't see myself writing him a Christmas card anytime soon. Nolly Allen says, which players in the team actually care and fight for the club? No desire whatsoever in the side. I think Danny Williams puts himself about.
Yeah, Danny Williams does. Okay, we spoke about the fact that we've lost a lot of the homegrown players in that side now. They are a lot of foreign players and imports. And again, you ain't going to have no feel for Reading. They just pay you wages. You'd hope that the new manager can get somewhat more out of them. I'm sure there's plenty more to give. But, you know, it's choppy foreigners.
No generalisation there whatsoever.
No xenophobia here on the tower list, then.
No. And let it be clear, there are plenty of stroppy Englishmen in that side.
There's more than enough stroppy Englishmen.
Well, now we've got the stroppy Scotsman out, so...
Yeah.
And on that note, let's move on. The dismissal of Steve Clark features, that is the only news in town, is news bites and pub chat and half a mailbag rolled into one, ladies and gentlemen. So without further ado, let's get on to it.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, so as mentioned, the big news is Steve Clark was sacked on Friday. His assistant, Kevin Keane, has also gone. Coaches Stephen Reid and Dave Besant still remain at the club for the time being. The man in temporary charge is Martin Cool, who's been managing our under-21 side for the past few seasons. Father of Aaron Cool, young Reading midfielder as well. So he's a player that knows a lot of the younger players in the squad, certainly, and he's got a good take on the club. A lot of people were asking why not Eamon Dolan, and obviously, sadly, Eamon is valiantly battling against cancer, and we wish him all the best in his recovery from that. So obviously not in a position to take over on a temporary basis. He has done a couple of times before. So best of luck to Martin. At the moment, at the time of recording, it looks like he'll be in charge for the Preston game, but we'll see how that one pans out. So gents, first thing to ask then, for you, was it the right decision?
For me, no. But I can see why it was made. I think there's a few reasons why I don't think it's the right decision. One, like I say, I think you've seen enough this season to be convinced that the team can turn around. Although on the opposite side, I can see why they've done it now because it doesn't look like it's close to turning around. And the other main reason for me is, who's going to replace him? And you've seen that Fulham, who we think are probably a similar club, similar stature, similar standing within the game, have been trying to hire a manager for 3 weeks, nearly a month. And look absolutely no closer to getting anyone else in. I don't see anyone, I'd love to, my mind to be blown by whoever they appoint, but I don't see anyone immediately who stands out to me or stands out to the whole of the Reading fan base, I'd say. Because if you look through the names, generally they split opinion, the names that are being bandied around as possible replacements for Steve Clark. I can understand why it was done, because there's a lot of frustration and the Fulham thing clearly escalated that and just made the whole atmosphere absolutely toxic around the place. But I'm frustrated that it happened because I don't think he was deserving of it.
Our friends over at the Two Unfortunates, Rob Langham, who's obviously appeared on this show several times and hopefully will be joining us for the Christmas special next Monday. More on that to come later in the show. He's tweeted, 17th last season, 9th now, 1 point of the playoffs, doesn't make for a convincing dismissal case by any standards. Sort of echoing a little bit of what Johnny said. Westie, can you see why some fans are upset that he did get the axe?
No, not personally. I said last week, sack him. That's exactly what I did. I think he's had more than enough opportunity to prove that he could turn things around. Yes, they had a decent run of form earlier in the season. We did get second. We've dropped away. We don't look like we're getting any better. We're certainly getting worse. And from when he's took over to where we are now, what has he done? Seriously, when you look at his record, I think it's 20 wins, 19 defeats, 16 draws, something like that.
It's 13 wins in 44 league games, I believe.
And that is poor. I mean, it's only, I said last week, it's only the FA Cup that skated over the fact that we were poor last year. We haven't been a great deal better this, apart from a small patch earlier in the season. And the FA Cup run, I think someone's pointed at it. If you look at the teams that actually played in it, it weren't until we played Arsenal, which we could have won. But we didn't. And I think you've got to take the FA Cup away and you've got a poor league record.
Absolutely. And this is what Ian Phillips says. He's messaged us on facebook.com/thetilehurst and he has said, something I saw on Facebook that really got my goat. Steve Clark didn't save us from relegation. In fact, although it was nice, his obsession with the FA Cup almost led to it. We're 16th when Adkins left. We finished 19th. That's not an improvement at all, is it? Also, the FA Cup run didn't get much media attention. Do you know why? We beat a below-par Cardiff team and fought to a scrappy win against 10-men Derby. Then we followed up with a draw against the League One side. Let's look at it how it is. The route to Wembley was not full of giant killing or amazing stories. It's scrappy football and a lot of luck. As for building us a great squad, what's the point if you don't know how to play them? Alex Fernandez, Ola John and Paolo Hurtado have not seen the light of day. He can't seem to find a good player, good place for the 2.5 million loan man Vidra, and he insists on playing the unprofessional joke of a goalkeeper, Ali Alhabsi. He will not be remembered fondly, he won't even be remembered at all. And the fact Fulham have said they don't want to talk to him just makes me smile all the more. Great podcast, as always. Thanks very much for that, Ian.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's... I can't see there wasn't too much feeling for or against him. I think I said this last week, so I've got no feeling.
Indifference, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've got no feeling for him as a manager. He's left nothing but... nothing, really. He's left nothing, me feeling absolutely nothing for him. I'm not disappointed he's gone. I didn't want to keep him, so sack him. Exactly what done.
The one thing I don't like about this is the revisionist history of the FA Cup run, because as it was going along and as we were preparing to face Arsenal in the semi-final at Wembley, you're not thinking, well, we've beaten a load of crap teams to get here.
No,
we're lucky to be here. You thought, we deserve to be here. We're going to enjoy the day. This is fantastic. And like you say, we nearly took Arsenal to extra time. Well, we did take them to extra time and possibly even penalties. You can only beat what is in front of you. And it is a fact that we performed better in the FA Cup than we did in the league, because he managed to get those players up for it. It would have been easy to fall on a dodgy pitch at Bradford.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, Johnny. But the thing is, if you can get a team of Reading's calibre to play like that against Arsenal, knowing that they've got it in their locker, and you can't do that at least every other week, or at least one or two, three times in every 10 games, then something's wrong there. And them players never looked like, more recently, that they were ever playing for him. So once that rot set in, and it wasn't just that, the crowd started dropping off.
Yeah.
He went to speak to Fulham. It left a lot of bad taste in it. And all that was just turning more negative and negative. And if they'd have lost another three or four games on the bounce, we wouldn't have been so near the playoffs. And I think if you're going to sack a manager because of the transfer window, and that's why a lot of them get sacked at the end of December, because that is the best time to sack a manager.
Yeah, well, the other point of view, and one that Will, up on the website, very well put together argument, just like literally an hour before Clark got sacked, was, I think you need to look at the bigger picture, saying, look at the recruitment, look at the sort of checks and balances of the squad, look at how it was put together. It's too easy just to blame Steve Clark. But Matt Castle says, managerial experience cost Clark. Wrong formation, too many loans and unbalanced squad was going to result in poor performances. My question is, do you think that Clark is better suited to being an assistant manager? Players respect him and he talks well, but ultimately he couldn't make the big calls himself and stubbornly stuck with 4-4-2, which wasn't working.
It's difficult to say because I don't think he's got managerial inexperience. I think because, you know, you learn that on the job as you're going. And if you're talking about managerial inexperience, you look at like people like Brian McDermott and Brendan Rodgers, who had no or one job, or certainly jobs very low down the ladder before they came here. And one of the top candidates that seems to be some sort of dream that everyone's having, Dennis Bergkamp. So I don't think managerial inexperience can necessarily be down for... You can put that down for why Clark has failed. As for the loans, I mean, you don't, like you said, we don't know in the boardroom whether they said to him, you're going to have to bring in a load of loans because we still don't want to burden the club with a massive wage bill. I'd imagine that if he could have signed players permanently, he would have done. And, you know, sticking with the 4-4-2, I think it's pretty clear in the squad who your best players are, and you're going to try and put them all on the pitch together. And you know, on Thursday against QPR, he did take one of those arguably best players out in Orlando Sarr to try and do something different, and it didn't work. I don't think inexperience cost him. I think I don't know what cost him, to be honest.
It's the imbalance, I think, is a big point for me.
Yeah.
And it's looking at all those players, and we've said this on the show as well. It's all very well and good having a load of wingers in reserve to come on and change games. And, you know, we were all really optimistic about the depth he had on the bench and the options you could do. But the point was, he was lacking in key positions. He didn't have a backup forward for when Sarr was suspended or injured or out of form. There's nobody else that can really do that job. And in centre mid, he was light, because as soon as Tishbola and Quinn went down, suddenly your options weren't looking at it. He obviously doesn't have a lot of faith in Alex Fernandez because he was barely playing. Doesn't see Michael Hector as a midfielder. He's never played him there since he's come to the club. Mm-hmm. So he's just built an unbalanced squad. I mean, what's the point of having Paolo Hurtado?
Yeah, again, what is the point? He's gone all the way from abroad. He's paid
well, not a great deal of money for him, but even so, they've got him across here, and he's not even had a game. And he's been playing players like Piazza, who've been often been poor most weeks, and he's not even had a look in. So, also, when you look at the back end of this year, once they've all disappeared, these lone players, we're left with a threadbare squad again.
Yeah. People like Nick Blackman and Chris Gunter are out of contract as well. I think that does kind of work in the favour of the new manager, and we'll just come on to who might take over in just a few minutes' time. But just overall, do you think Steve Clarke, how do you see him bouncing back? Do you think he's going to come and get another job at this sort of level, or is he going to have to maybe go abroad or go up to Scotland, somewhere like that, to rebuild his reputation?
I think he'll be all right. I mean, he's been around the game long enough. People are always going to take a gamble on him. I think when you look at any job that goes in any of the three, four divisions, I think you always get the same names banded about for a number of years until they decide that they're not interested anymore. I think Clark's got enough behind him, reputation-wise, and decent run at West Brom, that someone will have a punt at him. Fulham were quite clearly prepared to not so long ago, so I can't see him not being out of the game for too long unless he decides to be, of course.
And he got Reading to their first semi-final in 88 years, but of course we won't talk about how he did that because it was rubbish.
Yeah, but the thing I say is that, I mean, it was great getting to semi-final. Obviously, some of us couldn't be there for certain reasons, which I've never mentioned on this show before.
Never
come up. But the other manager that didn't last a full season in recent memory was Terry Bullivant. And it's easy to forget that Terry Bullivant had two good cut runs as well. He took us to a quarter final where we got cheated by Craig Hignett, wasn't it?
It was a disgrace, though.
Yeah, and we got to the fifth round of the FA Cup as well, and Leif Sandford knocked us out. He had a great cut record. We beat Leeds, had some great results, but he as well just went into a complete tailspin and got the axe as well. So
even if we'd have won the FA Cup, it's still a poor league run, and that's what we're judging him on. No one cares too much about the FA Cup. If we'd have won it, great, but we didn't, and our league form's been poor. Simple as that.
You can't rewrite history, but I do think if the Fulham saga hadn't turned out the way it did, or hadn't been done so publicly as it was, then I think we wouldn't be talking about him being sacked right now, because I think you'd still be
hanging on.
You'd be hanging on, but yeah, I think you would be giving him the time. I think the fact that happened meant you couldn't trust the manager. I think most people could just about see what he was trying to do and could cling to those good results that happened. But I think once that Fulham saga happened, and whatever did happen, we'll never know the full truth of who said what and who decided to turn it down, etc. But I think that was sort of like the final straw, really. Because you can hear it in the stands. Like we said, no Steve Clarke's Barmy Army. The only manager we've been singing is Parkinson, and that's because it's December.
Yep. Again, I think also not just with the fans so much, it's the board. When they've given him every opportunity to succeed, I think they've let him bring in his own backroom staff, they've let him bring in his own players, and he's gone and talked to another club. Now, whether they agreed with that or not, they must have thought, you know what, okay, well, fair enough then. See you later.
Made his own bed. Like I said, an idea for some people, and I was having a discussion on Twitter with someone earlier, and he was saying, you know, you look at the stats and, you know, the progression and stuff they've made, but it's all the little things added together. I don't think it's any one thing that's done him in. It's not just this run. It's not just talking to Fulham. It's not just slightly dodgy signings. But you throw them all together,
little bits of everything.
It's a toxic mix. Definitely. And it gave the board an excuse to get rid of him. And I think they do value loyalty. And I think, you know, the whole Fulham saga's really made it difficult. And when you don't get results to go with it, you're a dead man walking.
And interestingly, just on a funnier note, just before we leave it at that, they were saying about Dave Besson warming up the goalkeepers the other week. Did you hear him on Radio Berkshire mention this? They said, obviously, Sal Bebo, although he wasn't the greatest goalkeeper in the world, he was a good goalkeeping coach. And we've obviously, at the moment, got two goalkeepers got an error in them. And Dave Besson was warming up the goalkeepers and apparently missed the target 8 times from 8 yards out.
Excellent.
So if that's what they're being taught by, I think we are in all sorts of trouble.
Well, we'll see if Mr. Besson survives when the new manager comes in. Now, in terms of who will replace Steve Clarke, not been an awful lot, actually. I was quite surprised. I thought they were going to make an immediate appointment when they got rid of Clarke. I thought it was going to come this morning, but it didn't.
Yeah.
The bookmakers immediately made Nigel Pearson the heavy favourite, and he remained that through most of the weekend. At one stage, he was even odds on to take over the job. So they clearly fancied him. Otherwise, there were a few sort of people around the periphery. Phil Parkinson, Brian McDermott, even Brendan Rodgers, a lot of former Reading names in the frame. And then this outlandish one that came up late on, I think it was Friday, Dennis Bergkamp being linked with the job. But none of them were really sort of making an impact in the odds up until this morning, where it seems there was a report on Sky Sports last night that Nigel Pearson had proved too expensive for Reading that they were pulling back from that. And that meant that Brian McDermott was the man to come in. And he's Brian McDermott, at the time of re-recording this, is the bookmaker's favourite for the job.
No. I think I was one of the adamant campaigners to get him the sack as well.
Exactly.
Don't never go back. It is pointless. We couldn't defend when he was here, so I don't know how you think they're going to turn it around all of a sudden.
I don't think it's a case of not going back. I think with Brian McDermott, he's an underdog coach or an underdog manager. I don't think he has the strength of... I don't know the guy, obviously, but I don't think he would have the strength of character to manage a group of egos. And I think that's what we've got now in the squad. I'm not saying that they're massively overinflated egos, but I'm saying there's a lot of personalities now in the squad. If you look back at what he did, there weren't really many superstars in that team. It was about the team ethic. Whereas I think now you've got a lot of players who probably are a bit more big time, certainly on a bigger wages. I don't think Brian McDermott was suited to that kind of
squad. No, it worked for McDermott. A lot of doing having a good run anywhere is timing. And I think when McDermott came in, it was a good time for him to come in. And once we got too big for him, then he dropped away. And I think when he did come in, obviously he knew all the players. We had a lot of homegrown players at the time. He'd come through with most of them. He trained them. He taught them himself. And they had a set way of playing then back then. Reading was get it forward, get it wide, get it in the box. Simple. Robert's come along, made that all work. Okay, great. Once he disappeared, that was it. We couldn't defend. We was all over the show, shambles. So I don't see going back to McDermott. It's absolutely pointless. And I think we'd just struggle if that happens.
The only thing I'll say in defence of Brian McDermott is that you've got to remember that he's never had money. When he was here, he was working on shoestrings. You know, he worked miracles. You know, who would have thought Ian Hart would do a job in the Championship for a couple of seasons? Players like that, even Jason Roberts, a lot of people laughed at him saying, old man signing, what are you doing? He had no money to work with, got that team promoted, got it to a playoff final, two cup quarter finals, and they were fighting in the Premier League, even having players like, you know, he was Premier League Manager of the Month in January.
Ledgerwood.
He had Ledgerwood and Tabb in his midfield for half the season. So he's never had money. He went to Leeds, and again, everyone knows a shamble at Leeds. I don't think anyone's going to judge any manager that goes to that club.
No, but what he did have at the time is he had a lot of players that will work for him, if that makes sense. Your Carragher, your Pierces, your Ledgerwoods, players like that who will give everything they got. And they ain't got a lot to give you skill-wise, but they will battle and kick and try and win your games. Tabb, another prime example of a sort of fan's favourite player who will run and run himself into the ground. But not a brilliant player, but he gives you all he has. He hasn't got that at the moment. And I think sometimes when you've got managers that do things on a shoestring, they always have to do them on a shoestring because that's what they're good
at. How do you know? I mean,
once you give him a load of money, I think I can't see it happening.
How do you know, though? He's never had the money.
I don't know. But I'm saying he had the opportunity. He's had it. Let's move on. Let's stop going backwards. Let's go forwards.
Well, look at digging into the mailbag, some of the reactions to it. John Faulkner says, sacking short-sighted, say the least. If Clark was a clown for shooting himself in the foot, imagine Nigel Pearson. FM Save says, what are your thoughts on Stephen Hunt being linked to the managerial vacancy? Worth giving him a go?
Was he actually serious? I thought that was very tongue-in-cheek.
I think someone on Twitter asked him, well, who would you make a good Reading manager? Responded, well, me, and I'd bring in an experienced coach. I think he might have mentioned Coppell.
Yeah, said, I want Coppell as my DOF.
Look, if Stephen Hunt wants to come here and be a coach, I think, fair play to him. I'm not quite prepared to take a punt on him. I think he's only got his B license. I think is he still playing?
He was more recently.
He was last season. Last year was with Ipswich. I'm not sure he's playing this year. Not for me for the time being. Daniel Roy Mackay said, we'd be really happy if McDermott came back. Should have never lost his job when he did. Forward Norwood, just back to the Clark, just says, wrong decision. So short and sweet there. And Brian Davis, Bergkamp, legit target or pipe dream? Also, Brian McDermott and Steve Coppell linked. Rodgers in play. Would you have any of them?
No. You know what? I know I say don't go back, but I think one player, if I would go for one manager that I would consider, just because we've got a better side now than when he was here first time, it's possibly Rodgers. But even that would be a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I think the fact that of all the targets, and this is of all everyone realistic listed on OddsChecker and other gambler-aware related websites, Rodgers is the one that interests me. Right? I hate myself for saying that.
When he was here, he didn't have the opportunity to play the way he wanted to play because the players just couldn't do it. And I think now when you look at the side they've got now, I think he's got better footballers in that side.
It doesn't stop him being a hideous media person.
And I was about to say, he's never going to win over the fans. You look at how quickly the fan base turned on Steve Clark for the Fulham thing. Look how quickly they turned on... let's be honest, Reading fans turn on, and I made this argument in my piece talking about why I didn't want Nigel Pearson to get the job. There's this mould, I think, that Reading fans want their managers to fit into, because the two that have been the most successful, Coppell and McDermott, were both similar types. But you out of that mould and you're immediately fighting an uphill battle. I'm not saying he couldn't win it over, especially if he got results.
It's just winning games.
But
I thought Clark was pretty similar to those, that dour sort of, you know, hard-working...
Yeah, and he was getting away with it till he spoke to Fulham.
Yeah, exactly.
To some extent, I suppose he was, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't want a Nigel Atkinson used car salesman back then, though.
Oh, God. God.
Yeah, and Rodgers was worse than that. I said...
I think David Brentwickle character more than anything.
I thought Rodgers was harshly sacked. I thought the timing was a bit harsh, but... No, and I don't think he's going to come back here. Anyway. I don't think he'd go from Liverpool to Reading.
Yeah, I think it's a bit small fry now for India.
I think he needs to go abroad, or I think he might end up back at Swansea. It looks like Gary Monk's under a lot of pressure.
Wasn't there a rumour that he was going to Qatar to manage some team and obviously pack it a large wage? I certainly saw that.
Wouldn't blame him. Dennis Bergkamp then. Brian says legit target or pipe dream. Could you actually see him coming here?
I think it would be a good opportunity for him to get into management. Yeah, definitely. I know he's been working with Ajax.
With Ajax, yeah.
Yeah.
Does work with Arsenal as well.
Again, if he's got genuine ambitions to be a manager, he might come and do it because, like I said off air earlier, I said at the moment, taking over Reading looks like a good prospect. They're not a team that's fighting relegation or have been relegated. They're a team that's, let's face it, just outside the playoffs with a decent squad of players. I think if you're a manager... who wants to make it into a Premier League manager, it's a good opportunity for you to take it. A bit like Swansea when Rodgers took over.
I saw Cranker's doing exactly the same at Middlesbrough as well. He's gone from Real Madrid, where he's been a coach there, obviously a top-level player, and he's gone straight into the Championship.
I'm not saying I particularly want it, but again, if he's serious about being a manager, it's a good opportunity for him. I
think he will get... Talking about what Johnny said in terms of McDermott and the type of squad he wants to work with, that'll be this is the squad for Bergkamp. It has got those bigger names, those... Yeah. Sort of egos, those flair players.
Well, he strolled into that place and everyone would respect him immediately because they knew he was a great footballer. And it might work. It might work.
I don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening and I'm not sure I would want it to see it happening. You know, if you talk about, was it Matt who talks about managerial inexperience for Clark? You've got none with Bergkamp.
Yeah, I know. But again, sometimes just the fact that he might come in, he might bring someone a decent big name with him, a coach.
But this is the thing, do you want to be taking a punt?
Technically, you're taking a punt with anyone.
No, true. But...
We thought Atkins was going to be a good manager at this level. It clearly wasn't.
Matt Atkins had a decent, very good track record.
Yeah, he did,
to be fair.
But he failed. That's what I'm saying. So technically, you're taking a punt with anyone, aren't you?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Reading have had a fairly decent run with first-time managers. Obviously, Mark McGee.
Yeah, fantastic.
Won the title in Division 2. Alan Pardew got us up. And
next England manager.
Yeah. So they've not done too badly with appointed first-time managers.
And at the time, McGee was a relatively big name for where we were because he played at a decent level.
Became his player manager, didn't he?
He did, and he lost his pace, but he still had a good touch.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, you're taking a punt with anyone. So Bergkamp, like I said, he was immediately get everyone's respect, and it raises the profile of the club, which might suit the ties quite nicely.
Yeah, very few public comments on the job. Alan Stubbs was the name linked again by Sky Sports last night. He's apparently ruled himself out today. Gary Bowyer came out and said he'd quite like the job. I'm sure you would, Gary. And obviously, as we've touched on, Stephen Hunt has come out and said he wants the job. Phil Parkinson is another name that always seems to be linked whenever the managerial vacancy comes up at the club. He spoke the other day saying he doesn't expect to be on their shortlist.
No, I'm sure he'd love the job, but...
Would you have him?
That's I don't expect to be on the shortlist, not... I don't want the job.
Yeah, I'd love to have the job, but I don't expect to be given a
Would you have him?
No.
Yes, but not for the sentimental reasons. I think because he's proven that he is a good enough manager.
Is he not another underdog manager, though? You've just said Brian McDermott's an underdog manager.
No, he is an underdog manager, yeah, but I would take the punt on him.
Is Lucas Pearson going to come in and go, well, I'm going to work hard for this bloke?
I don't think Lucas Pearson's ever done a dark day's work in his life.
I think if you met Phil Parkinson down a dark alley, he'd probably do what he tells you, to be honest.
You might well do, but I wasn't a big fan of Parkinson as a footballer, so I'm not going to be a big fan of him as a manager.
So what about Pearson then? I said he is still, apparently he's too expensive for us. We've got some comments talking about, should that be an option? Dean Bennett says the fact that Pearson's too expensive lends towards a lack of ambition from the Ties. Pearson isn't exactly a top manager.
See, I wonder if this is because Clark has just brought all his own staff in, and Pearson, they might have talked to him, and he's come in and said, well, I want to bring all my own staff in. So then you've got to sack the other ones and bring in the new ones.
And yeah, and you couldn't blame him, could you, really? No. I mean, if you want to have a decent run of things, you want to be doing it with people that you know. I know Coppell come in and done it completely differently. He took on everyone that was there. But again, how much was that? Well, if you're coming in, you're going to have to take all these people on. I mean, they're lucky, Reading, in the fact they have got a lot of decent backroom staff that are still remaining at the club. But the ones he brought in, I know Keane's gone now, he lost his job automatically. But your Reeds and your Bessons, have they improved things, would you say? I don't know, because I'm not there from day to day, but it doesn't seem like they have. No one, you never hear anyone mention, oh, actually, Reed and Besson have been a breath of fresh air for the coaching staff, because no one ever said it. So that would suggest that they haven't been. So if you are a manager and you're coming in to take over a club like Reading, you're going to want to bring your own men in. And if you're not getting the opportunity, then why take the job?
Yeah, no, that's the point I'm making. I think, you know, we might be hamstrung by allowing Steve Clark to change everything at the back, and that could be why Pearson is proving too expensive.
And we've had to pay him a payoff as well, Clark, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Whereas a few weeks ago, we were looking at getting money from him from Fulham, so that's always a fun experience. I've made my case on Pearson. You can go on to thetilesn.com. I don't want him. I think he's a bully. I think he's a not very nice person. Again, I do not know the man personally, but just by judging what he's done in public and the instance he's been through, just no, not for me.
Can we just rewind a year now? Because it's nearly a year. What was the reaction when we saw, I mean, admittedly, we only had a day to do the podcast before Steve Clark was appointed. What was the reaction when we mooted Steve Clark as a name?
I think it was largely good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't get the impression that any of these names that we've mentioned is met with certainly 60, 70% positivity.
No.
There's no one that you think, I really want him, he's got a great track record, he's got a really good case to be made manager. And that was the worry I had if we sacked Steve Clark. And I don't think there is anyone, like I said, I'd love to be proven wrong, but I don't think there is any standout candidate or anyone that would totally appease everyone at Reading if they're appointed now.
I don't think there's anyone in the lower leagues, apart from probably Hasselbank. Sorry. Apart from Hasselbank, it looks like he's going to get a job, or has probably got a job by the time this goes out, that stands out as a lower league manager just doing well. I mean, before he used to go and sort of steal managers off lower league clubs, but that doesn't seem to happen anymore because no one's got any standout. A bit like your Clough's getting another job after job, even though he fails every time. It's like the Brian Laws. I couldn't stand because I thought he was a parasite.
Well, clubs don't want to take the gamble.
No.
They don't, and the financial implications of getting gambles wrong now are just getting worse and worse. They want that established name. They want to get the fans on side as quickly as possible because they're doing things in a short time frame. And the best way to get fans on side in the short term is get a big name manager or get a manager that you know, because you don't want fans immediately going, oh, we'll lose this guy.
But it's a shame that people don't get that opportunity.
I agree.
Get that opportunity. I mean, unless you've got a big name as a footballer, you get bumped up a bit quicker. But in general, you don't go taking managers off people anymore lower down.
And almost it's a shame if Reading start going down that path as well, I think. I think we've always had that underdog sort of mentality. We're not a big club. And if we did take a name like Dennis Bergkamp, it would be, I think, a bit of a statement of intent that, yes, this club has changed and is evolving, so to speak. And we fear change.
Okay, well, we've talked about it then. We've talked about this for nearly half an hour. It's been a bumper pub chat. After all of this, who do you want? You've heard all the names. If you're in charge right now and you've got that blank slate, who do you want to take over? Westy, I'm going to put you right on that spot.
It's tough. I think we've made cases for all of them not getting a job.
Exactly.
We struggled to make a case for any of them getting a job. I think I said Pearson last week. I'll stick with that one, although it seems like we won't get him.
Johnny.
If he becomes available, Gary Monk. Otherwise, Pearson.
I'll say, welcome back, Brian. All is forgiven.
Okay, I don't think there's no strong case for anyone, and I think we've just proved that by all having a different opinion.
At the end of the day, someone's got whoever comes in, you just got to get behind them, hope they get results.
That's it. Just win games, and then you'll be a great manager. If you don't, you get the sack.
Simple as that.
Yeah, easy as that.
Well, anyway, yeah. Took us half an hour to get there, but that is that. Anyway, I said thank you very much to everyone who sent in tweets, emails and Facebook posts. I said no news bites really to discuss anyway, but what we will do is move on to part two of the mailbag. We've got a few more general questions on the squad before any other business.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, as said, thank you to everybody who's got in touch. Let's just get to a few other bits of discussion not related to the managerial situation. Start with Dave. He says, top show as always. I agree that the midfield is soft. Are we missing Mr. Hope Akpan to do a job?
Scored, did, wouldn't he? Scored.
Did. Got ahead of Blackburn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he was a poor footballer, Hope Akpan.
I do think it was silly to let him go in hindsight. But hindsight's, I don't think we had too many.
Yeah, I get it. If it wasn't for the injuries, I don't think we'd be talking about Hope Akpan. And the fact that we are, you mean, how desperate things are.
You mean the next Makalele?
Yeah, the next Makalele, yeah. Hope Akpan is not going to save anybody, trust me.
I have hope.
Well, we don't have hope. No, I don't think we're missing him, but I do think we're missing someone in the midfield. I think we're missing Chaloba. I said it a couple of weeks ago. He was that midfield pretty much last season when he came in.
Daniel says, a big fan of Obita, but I've always thought he's defensively suspect. Are you happy with Taylor at left back?
Yeah, steady footballer. I think he's a good footballer.
Yeah, very much in the Chris Armstrong mould. Happy with him. I think Obita will get his chance again, but I think this is good for him. I think he needs to realise that you've got to put in that hard graft. You know, he was an automatic choice for several years.
Yeah,
now he's got to fight for that place, and I think that'll be good for him.
It's a shame we can't keep two centre-backs fit to keep Hector at the side.
Yeah, we can't, no.
Teach him a lesson.
I think we said last year that Obita's form had dropped off from his first year, and again, the fact that he's not been playing shows that it has. Again, there's more to come from Obita, but he needs to start showing it pretty soon.
Yeah, Stuart says, how do you value Nick Blackman? If he demands a Pog-style contract, say $35,000 a week, do you give it to him? Now, there was a couple of rumours, I think, on Team Talk, that Derby were looking at making a cut price January swoop for him.
Well, someone will. He's been good this year and he looks a threat in this league, which he hadn't done previously.
Although he's not scored in a while.
No, he's not.
Are we jumping off the bandwagon? No, not quite jumping off the bandwagon just yet.
No, he's not scored in a while, but he does look a threat, and I think teams will be prepared to gamble on a free transfer that scores goals in this division, and he's doing that. So, like I said before, I think if you're going to replace a player that's scoring, say he gets 15, 16 goals this year, if you're going to replace someone like that in this league, it's going to cost you 4, 5, 6 million. So if you've got to give him $30,000 a week, that's just what you've got to pay nowadays.
You chucking the money at him, Johnny?
Surprisingly, no. Because I don't think he's done it for long enough to prove it or warrant it. You know, we look at someone like Hal Robson-Kanu when he turns up when he's got a contract running out in 4 months.
He's got a Welsh shirt on.
Yeah, and you know, he somehow gets a new contract off the back of it. I don't think... You know, you can. I don't think we're in a position to offer him that contract on the back of two good months, although they were two exceptional months, and I always believed in him. I love you, Nick. But yeah, I wouldn't be bankrupt in the club on the back of 2 months of good football.
No.
Again, it's one of those things that divides opinion. But to replace him, he can cost you a lot of money anyway. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. In many ways,
absolutely. It's a tough one. To be honest, it'll almost be good if Reading get a big offer in for him, because it'll force him to make the decision whether to go for a contract or take the money.
That's not if you're going to replace him. Fine. You've got a better replacement to come in. Great. But if you haven't, you might as well keep him.
Absolutely. Ian Phillips says, 1 point of the playoffs, but if we carry on like this, can you see us winning again anytime soon? When did everyone start liking El Habsi? I was shocked Bond didn't come back into the side after coming back from injury. He did okay. Al Habsi
can be... You can look at him sometimes and think, what a great goalkeeper. He makes saves that you can't believe. And then... You get chances like that against QPR where my son could have saved it in the under-8s and it's gone between his arms and through his legs. And, you know, I mean, he makes stupid errors that you shouldn't be making at his age.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't think Al Habsi did anything to lose the shirt, really, until the last two games. I thought, you know, Jonathan Bond obviously got injured. Al Habsi came in and deputised well enough. And I think it was pretty clear throughout the pre-season that we didn't have a number one. And like I say, if you go back 3 or 4 months... you're looking at Jonathan Bond and saying, bring Al Habsi in. So suddenly when everything's going wrong, you look back on everything else with rose-tinted glasses.
It's funny, though. I was thinking the other day, I said, I don't seem to remember too many goalkeepers making mistakes that have helped us over the last two seasons. But
apart from Al Habsi, yeah.
But our goalkeeper seems to be making them every other week.
Yeah, well, Jack Killick, just to finish off the mailbag, raised a good little teaser question. He says... Would you rather have Al Habsi, Bond and Moore Well, Federici is your only registered goalkeeper in the squad, and if he was injured or suspended, he'd have to play an outfield player in goal. It's one of those things that will never happen, because there'd always be a youth keeper somewhere around that you'd be able to play.
Yeah. I said off air, would Anderson have been any worse than what we've got?
We don't know. Anderson didn't play a game for Reading.
No, he didn't. But
everyone seems to think he would have been all right.
Yeah, again, he could have been much worse.
I would have gone, if this is my choice, I go Federici. Because then if Federici gets injured, you just get a loan in. You get a loan keeper.
But then who'd you put in goal if Federici is injured?
Do you know what? I reckon them
three... For the loan keeper.
You have to play an outfield player in goal.
I reckon them three could have been all in goal together, and at least one game, they'd all made a hash Jake of the same shot.
Jake Cooper's got to be great in there. I mean, he's tall. Surely he can do a job.
He's not very mobile. Who would you put in goal?
Jake Cooper.
We used to have the old days, you used to put Quinn and Senior in goal, yeah. Didn't you? Back in the... That was good, that did. I just enjoyed that one. I mean, John Terry went in goal for Chelsea against us when we crippled two of their goalkeepers.
Yeah.
So it does happen.
That was only for a minute.
Bobby Savage, yeah.
That's Bobby Savage.
I'd put Nick Blackman in goal. He likes the diving.
Yeah. I think he likes lying on the floor.
No way. Jake Cooper for keeper. Anyway, thank you very much again to everyone who's tweeted in, Facebooked in, and sent us emails to tullersend@gmail.com. Not a lot to get on to now, other than any other business, where we preview Saturday's trip to Preston.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
So guys, we can't do it on a rainy Medeski on a Thursday night, but can we do it at a rainy Preston on Saturday?
Let's hope so.
And that concludes any other business. Thank you very much for the podcast. I've been down... No. Preston then, Johnny. 18th in the Championship. Not an awful record, but not anything stellar. However, the recent form, they've only lost 1 in 9, but they've only won 3 games that time. So they had a bit of a rocky start when they came up to the Championship, but they've slowly got up to speed and are looking a good side. They beat Burnley 2-0 away. It's better even than we did when we were in top form.
Yeah. Mm. That's a steady Eddie team, and another team has just come up. Like I said, they're finding their feet. I'm sure at home they're going to be a tough team to beat like any other side in the Championship. So it's a good game if someone can come in and take over before them, but it's not a bad game to be managerless for, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think especially now you're sort of on a bit of a hiding to nothing, really, with the team, and I think it's definitely a team we should be beating. But then again, you know, this squad can just about scrape a win against the bottom of the table, Bolton, although... How much you blame Steve Clarke for that, or his assistants, etc., or the players will?
Well, it's another game where we'll see what the players' state of mind were. If they go out and roll Preston over 4-5-0, then we think actually there was something that was toxically wrong in that dressing room. If they go and put another abject performance in, then maybe Clarke wasn't the problem.
If they lose 5-0,
Not a lot to fear from Preston when you actually look at their team. Obviously, a lot of not very familiar names for Championship fans. But they've got a couple of recognisable ones. They've got Joel Garner. They've got Will Keane, who's on loan. He's got a cracking goal, cracking solo goal at the weekend. Chris Kirkland on the bench.
Is that Owen Doyle on the bench?
Yeah, it is.
Gallagher.
Yeah, Gallagher's been around for ages. John Welsh, former Championship manager legend, John Welsh. Yeah.
Wasn't Owen Doyle meant to be the great next saviour of striking?
Banged down like 20-odd for Chesterfield, didn't he? Then moved, was it to Cardiff?
He moved to Cardiff, yeah.
And then they were stockpiling strikers a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. And none of them were particularly good.
No, Mr. Lafondra as well.
Mm.
They should have nothing to fear. I said they're on a, you know, 1-9 is a good run, but they've only won 4 games all season. They're a team that doesn't seem to concede very many. Obviously, they had a lot of defeats early doors, but I think they went 4 or 5 games without conceding a goal not so long ago. So they've scored 15, conceded 16 in their 19 games. So
steady side, steady Championship side at the moment anyway.
Sort of team, though, that if you get into a good goal or two early, you know, it sounds obvious, if you get in, like, you've got a good chance of winning the game.
Well,
but
at the moment, you wouldn't suggest that would happen.
No.
We're going to get that early goal, calm everyone down. Don't know who's in the dugout, I suppose.
I don't know. Reading have got took a lot of leads recently away from home and got turned over, so I wouldn't judge that by
new manager, new start, yeah, new era.
It'd be nice to see what the attitude the players come out with. That's what I'm looking at. What attitude to come out? Are they going to start kicking and fighting all of a sudden? Then you'd have thought it was the manager that was the problem.
And I, for one, welcome our new manager, Overlord, whoever you may be, getting my support early on for this podcast. We will back you 100%.
Unless Mr. Pearson sees your last article.
Until you start losing games. And then we are off that bandwagon.
That's it. Then we'll be singing for your head as well. Like I said, fickle football fans.
The home of fickle football fans. No. Anyway, prediction league time. Speaking of fickle and ups and down forms, one man predicted such gloom against QPR.
Finally, first of the season.
It's a three-pointer for Mr. Alan West, saying a 1-0 win for QPR.
I was just saying off air as well, have you noticed that my sudden influx of form on the prediction table have coincided with Reading's poor form? And I did say I was going to go negative, and it does seem to be paying dividends for me.
Yeah, you got all 3 points. That takes you up to 8. Handbags also predicted a win for QPR. He said 2-0, so he gets one more point. He's back to the bottom on 5. Johnny, no joy for me or you this week. I still sit on 13, you're on 11. And Mr. Charles Watts also predicted a Reading win. He's top of the league on 14 points. So there's only 3 points between that top three.
Now, I'm a bit like Pavel Pogrebniak. I seem to do well sort of December, January, and then tail off again for the rest of the season.
Well, this week, Johnny, I'll give you first a bet. Gamblerware.
I'll go 3-1 Reading.
Always. Oh, that is optimistic. I like it.
Ever the optimist.
I'm sticking negative.
Oh, you say, I was going to say, are you saying negative?
I'm going to say 0-0.
0-0.
It's not too negative, though.
Well,
that's a slight positivity in there.
Yeah, it's a quick little bit of a turnaround. It's a clean sheet for one.
Yeah, I think Reading are going to grind out a 2-0 win.
Clean sheet.
Yeah, I think it's just the sort of thing that Reading will do. I really do think.
Well, I hope you're right, the pair of you.
As always, I'll get Charles's thoughts and Handbags' thoughts as well for the game. Again, massive apologies for no podcast extra. We said on the last time we recorded a show, myself and Charles, that, you know, the show is always subject to something wacky happening. We've had unexpected illnesses and managers going, not going, and this time the manager did go. So understandably, Mr. Watts was a very, very busy man on Friday, so we didn't have time to record. Hopefully, unless it'll be typical now, so a manager will get appointed Friday morning. So I won't make any guarantees, but at the moment we are hopeful we're going to record, so keep an eye out for that. But in terms of this podcast, we've got one more before the New Year, chaps. We have Christmas off here because we're lazy.
Well, I think we deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. Such unprofessionalism deserves a break. But anyway, yeah. So as is tradition on this show, we will be having our Christmas special down at the Spread Eagle pub. If you've never been there before, it is a stone's throw from the former Elm Park in Tarlhurst in Reading. And everyone is welcome to come and join us. Have a pint, join in. We'll be having our annual awards. We'll hand out such esteemed accolades as the Hal Robson Canoe Underachiever Award.
Which, again, might actually go to Hal Robson Canoe again this year.
I don't think he's a favourite.
I think there's a lot of candidates this year.
I think everyone is going for the wacky sideways sort of vote that the Underachiever's not Hal Robson Canoe.
Yeah, well, I think Hal Robson Canoe's been hiding enough in the stands for the last couple of weeks for us to forget about it for a certain extent. And he's done quite well.
On my list to listen back to last year's show and see what we were all predicting then, because we did make some predictions in terms of who was going to be the most improved player.
That's better been sold.
Did I say Nick Blackman?
I think he might have done, actually.
I think
several people said Carney. Someone said Pog. I can't remember. Anyway, so that is going to take place at 7:30.
I don't think anyone's in Drenna.
I think he'd hopefully gone.
Unprofessional joke.
So that'll be 7:30 on Monday, which is the 14th of December. If you've got any questions about it, just send us a tweet to @thetarlhurstend or drop us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. The three of us will all be there. Handbags has also said he's going to be there. Rob Langham from the Two Unfortunates says he's going to be there as well. So already got a bit of a crowd in. A couple of other familiar voices from the podcast are going to turn up as well, some of our assistant editors. So don't worry, you won't be just sat on a table with the three of us. But we will be there to sign autographs for a fee.
Hey, yeah, form an orderly queue.
It'll be like those Adele tickets. People will snap those up dead quick.
Yeah, I don't think they will, but yeah.
No. But on that note, if you do, as I said, fancy, in all seriousness, giving backing to the show, I said a big thank you again to Mac Tiger, to Lord Treby, and to our Hulk lover himself, Valdemar. Big thank you to those of you done. And there will be a link to the crowdfunding page up on the podcast post on thetarlhurstend.com. And again, if you can't find that, again, please do drop us a tweet. But gents, thank you very much. One more to go till Christmas. One big effort. And then we can appoint a new manager of this podcast to take us into a bold new era.
Yeah, and find someone else we can pick on, hopefully.
Yeah, do we feel as though we've lost the fans? I think with the mailbag bulging, the fans are certainly still with us.
Like I said, when things are going bad, you get a bulge in mail sack. Oh, I'd be careful how I said that. If you know what I mean. Especially around Christmas.
No, please tell me what you mean.
You know what I mean.
That's in the after show. Well, that is in the after show. Right, rabbling done. That's us out. Only thing to be said, as always, come on you arse. It's funny how the
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.